Hi, I'm Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. State health officials say they're pleased that the number of new cases of the coronavirus is trending downward. Vermont now has one of the lowest rates in the country. At the same time, there's been a big push to expand testing and the tracing of positive cases in the state. Most non-essential retail stores, but not bars and restaurants just yet, will be allowed to open at 25% capacity starting today if they want to. Daycare centers will be allowed to open on June 1st, but some people think the rules are too rigid and will discourage some centers from reopening. Today on Vermont Edition, we'll get an update concerning many of the aspects of the coronavirus pandemic with Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan. Tracy, many thanks for taking the time to be on the program today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Tracy, we heard from the governor's press briefing that the general trend lines in Vermont look really good right now regarding the reduction of new cases of the coronavirus. There was a time when the number of cases was doubling every 3 days. I think it's now at every 40 weeks. I mean, that is a dramatic change. From an overall perspective, how do you view things now? Are we at a stage, I think the health commissioner said, we're past the peak, we're trending down. Do you think the state's in pretty good shape at this point?
I think the state is in good shape, and I will probably use the phrase cautiously optimistic. Certainly here within Vermont, we've had tremendous success, and I would say that's primarily due to Vermonters and due to the leadership that was shown by the governor in making some good decisions early, even when our case number was relatively low compared to other states. But we've had a whole state that's really joined hands and cooperated and taken this seriously. Of course, we're also benefiting from things like being a low-density state in terms of population. And it's been very good. I say cautiously optimistic because, of course, we are an island in that our rates are very low, but states around us are not necessarily experiencing the same situation. And so we need to really think about how do we maintain everything we can do as we see more people come in or as we see just increased congregation even within our state. I don't want to just put that on out-of-staters. As we also begin to socialize and connect with each other more, how do we maintain some of our principles so that we don't see the surge that we could see?
I mean, you raise a really interesting question. The governor said that on Wednesday he's going to have an economic package for the tourism industry. How does the state make sure, if on one hand the state of Vermont is urging tourists to come to the state and play here and live here for a while, how does the state do that at the same time by implementing certain health protocols?
I'd say we do it probably in three ways. The first way is surveillance. So this is a really fundamental public health role. We continue to test. We look at the numbers and we surveil the population so that we will know if things start going in the wrong direction and then take action. I would say the second way is to continue to be vigilant, even within the new guidelines. So mask wearing should be continued. We're seeing more and more evidence now that not only is it a good idea from a common sense point of view, but we're seeing more science now because some people have had a chance to study it over the last couple of months. We're seeing more science now that it genuinely does reduce the chances of passing along infection by decreasing the movement of respiratory droplets from someone if they're wearing a mask. And then I think the third piece is really messaging for everyone, including folks coming in from out of state, once they are able to come in, that it's really important that those quarantines, getting tested, and also for our visitors to maintain the social distancing, the masks, the hand washing. We really want to make sure that people are really paying attention to the things that we're doing and also doing them when they're here in Vermont.
Would you expect that starting by the 4th of July that folks who come to Vermont from other states, would they still have to quarantine?
I don't know. I'm not going to get out ahead of the governor. I think that will depend a little bit on our numbers. As we're opening up the spigot now and we're seeing people come in, we are requiring quarantine. If our numbers remain very low, the governor may decide to lift that. He may decide to modify that. But if our numbers start to tick up, which from a public health perspective is very much expected, not necessarily a spike, but we would expect, given the fact that COVID-19 is still here, it's no less dangerous as an illness. So we would expect, and it's no less transmissible, just to be clear. So we would expect that it will tick up as we start to congregate with each other and congregate with people from outside our state. But if it ticks up only slightly and we're able to manage and isolate it, that could make a difference on what the governor will recommend midsummer. But if we see the numbers start to go up significantly, then we may need to continue to be very cautious.
Well, as you mentioned, the state is talking about ramping up testing dramatically, trying to do perhaps as many as 1,000 a day. So it seems almost inevitable that the number of positive cases would go up. But is this a case where that percentage of positive rate becomes very important?
It does. And our percentage of positive rate remains low among all the total tests that we're doing. And it will probably continue to stay low and even go down as we're testing more and more people who are asymptomatic. We're finding fewer and fewer cases. As you remember, early on, we only tested people who were quite ill. And even then, of course, the vast majority didn't have COVID-19, but a higher percentage did. And then over time, we started to test people who were moderately ill, who showed only mild symptoms. And now we're shifting to asymptomatic, meaning they have no symptoms. So we're finding fewer and fewer positive cases. Hopefully, we continue in this trend. But the testing is really important because it's a way for us to know where we are. And then the continued testing gives us a sense of what's changing as we change our social patterns and our travel patterns.
Tracy, we got this email from Steve who wrote, "With as few cases as we have, we could certainly open things up. This thing is over. The pandemic is not raging in Vermont." There are probably a bunch of people who feel that way. What do you say to them?
So I say that it's a global pandemic. It's not just a Vermont pandemic, and that's the difference. And certainly right now in the United States, it's very much a national pandemic. You can see a lot of activity in our neighboring states. Massachusetts is really in the middle of something right now. New York continues to struggle. And so it's true, if we were just looking at Vermont numbers and we didn't anticipate that we were part of a larger country, which we are, we may have a very different plan for reopening. But the reality is Vermont is very much a tourist state, particularly in the summer, and people will leave Vermont and want to come back and forth. And we are living, of course, in a country, in a world where there's plenty of movement. So we cannot assume we're an island. We're not. And we are in a good shape right now. And I think I think the governor's got a very wise plan. He's obviously, facing a lot of pressure to reopen. And we'd all like that. I mean, there's a lot of people suffering. But he's also really weighing that with public health. And it's a tough balance. But I think he's taking the right approach.
A lot of folks want to talk to you today, Tracy. So let's start off with Hillary, who's calling from Brattleboro. Hi, Hillary. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I have family that lives about an hour north of Brattleboro, and I either have to take a bus or someone has to pick me up. And so there's sort of a danger in, like, getting on the bus and then going to see them, or if they pick me up, riding in the car with them. So I guess my question is, what is the danger of riding in a car with someone? And even after you do that, where you take the bus, if you were to take a test, would you have to, like, lay low for a while after the test, even though it came back negative?
Hillary, are you talking about riding in a car with someone and everybody is wearing a mask, driver and passengers?
Yeah, if I were to wear a mask and the driver were to wear a mask, like, what is the, that okay or is a risk?
Sure. And, you know, this is all about making decisions to decrease the risk. There's nothing that's risk-free, but certainly riding in a car with someone is lower risk. Again, assuming that you don't have any symptoms or not feeling ill, and that the driver's not feeling ill. And if you're both wearing masks, another way to reduce the risk is to open up the windows. All of that helps. And of course, getting tested anytime is helpful. It gives you a sense of your status. But there would be no reason to lay low for 14 days after that, unless, of course, you found out that one of you was COVID positive, because riding in a car with someone for a long time, even with masks, could qualify as a close contact. So you would be asked to monitor if one of you were to become ill after that, soon after. But other than that, it's relatively low risk. And again, because we know this is in our community, everything is a level of relative risk, but I would say that's a relatively low risk.
Let's turn to Don, who's calling from Facetown. Hi, Don. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, my question was, I was scheduled for knee replacement surgery up at Copley on the 31st of March, you know, and properly it was canceled about a week before. My question is, for overnight stays in the hospital, which would, by case they claim, would be one night, when do you expect that might be opened up?
Sure. I anticipate that that will be opening up in the next few weeks. It could be as early as next week, but I know we're just opening up now for outpatients, so it's more likely to be open in the next couple of weeks. The only thing that might change that trajectory is, again, if we saw our cases start to go up, and then we may have to rethink. But as far as I know, hospitals are making plans now, and it may be hospital by hospital, but they're looking at their plans for testing their staff. They're likely going to be testing inpatient. And I anticipate that would be happening in the next few weeks, but we don't have a firm date at this time.
So, Tracy, just to be clear, for folks who are able to have procedures in the hospital when it's an outpatient situation, that can start to open up now?
I believe that the hospitals have been given the go-ahead, and so some hospitals may be opening that now, but they've been given the go-ahead to submit plans and move forward on that.
Let's talk to Carolyn, calling from South Burlington. Hi, Carolyn. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, Bob. Hi, Tracy. My neighbors and I are wondering when we will be able to hold yard sales again. Has the governor addressed that at all?
As far as I know, the governor hasn't addressed yard sales particularly, although I don't hear every word of his press conferences. Sometimes I'm in meetings. But
actually,
He did mention it today.
Okay. He did, because people asked about yard sales and garage sales, and he said he thought it was okay as long as it didn't exceed 10 people, and that would be including the people who were holding the sale, and that if as long as everybody could have some common sense about it and not let it get too crowded, that he thought that yard sales and garage sales could proceed under very limited circumstances.
Thank you. Thanks for addressing that, Bob. I missed that. Thanks.
I hope I got it right.
that's what I heard him say.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, that's
true. We're asking for groups under 10, and so that would make sense. I saw a lot of yard sales going on last weekend, and I noted that people were wearing masks and there were low numbers. And so I feel like people have been using common sense with those already.
And that's such an important part of Vermont summers, when yard sales and garage sales just dot the landscape and everybody is going around seeing what's available. It's a real hobby for a lot of folks. We were talking earlier about the ramping up of testing, and there's a schedule for the next week or so, and some of those sites are already booked completely and some of them are still open. Tracy, tell us the value of ramping up all this testing. Is it to see just how far this coronavirus has really spread in the state?
Yes, it is. And it is a CDC recommendation to test at a particular rate per 100,000. And in Vermont, to achieve that rate, we'd be testing at about 1,000 per day. It's to see how far we've gone. And particularly as we open, it's really to get a sense of whether or not we have cases that are increasing. And so it's a little bit about a snapshot now to give us a sense, are we okay to open? You know, the federal guidelines laid out a few conditions attached to reopening, and one of them was having the testing capacity to be able to surveil on a regular basis. And so that's part of it. And then as we move forward, to give us a sense of whether or not we're seeing a surge in cases.
Tracy, I've heard some health officials in other states talk about this idea that they think that a rather sizable percentage of the population of their state have the coronavirus but are asymptomatic. I've heard this also from some countries in Europe that folks think, you know, it might be 25, 30, 35% of the population actually would be testing positive for the virus but would not be showing any symptoms at all. What are your thoughts about that? Do you think that a lot of people are asymptomatic, or is that something that's still a work in progress?
You know, we were hearing that as well. And again, that might be presenting differently in different populations or countries. What we're seeing so far in Vermont, now that we are opening up and testing more asymptomatics, is that we are not seeing a lot of cases among asymptomatic people who feel well. Again, you know, that might change. We may find some pockets, but right now it doesn't appear to be a significant population for having coronavirus or therefore spreading it. But our tests are not detecting COVID-19 in most of the asymptomatics we're testing. In fact, in very, very few.
I know that one day does not make a trend. Dr. Levine was talking about the most recent day of testing where I think he said there were about 700 tests and there were no positives. So that would be along your lines of maybe the number of people who are asymptomatic is not as large as we think it is.
You know where we may see it more? When we find a case and we test some of the close contacts around that case, for example, staff at a facility where we've had a few cases, some of those staff are asymptomatic and a few of them have been positive. So we may be finding that in places where there was higher risk, for example, a close contact to someone who was COVID-19 positive, we are finding that some of those are asymptomatic. However, out in the general population, where most people are not aware that they've had contact with a known COVID-19 case, or where we're not following up because there isn't a case investigation happening, we are not finding it as much. So the asymptomatics may be concentrated more among those who are among close contacts, and those might be the ones who are positive.
Let's hear from Karen, who's calling from Shelburne. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I have a call about a non-urgent dental need, which my dentist has told me that he can't fix. I have a broken tooth in my mouth, and it's kind of wreaking havoc in a number of different ways. It's causing pain. I'm worried about infection. I can't swish with hydrogen peroxide because of other medication I'm taking. So I've been waiting to find out if they're ever going to open dental care. In the interim, it's getting worse and affecting my health. What can I do?
Well, first of all, I'm really sorry about your dental pain. It's very uncomfortable, and I know people are worried about that. We've been talking to the Dental Society, and I know that the governor's office is working on moving more quickly to open up services like dental, physical therapy, and other types of services. I anticipate that will open up very soon. But if you're having severe pain and you're worried about infection, you could also see urgent care in the meantime. That might be another way to handle it. But I do anticipate that dental will open up soon. Again, I don't know what qualifies as a dental emergency, but I know for some emergencies they're open now. So I'm sorry I don't have more advice on that right now.
Karen, we're sorry you're going through what you're going through. I have to believe that there are a number of people in the state of Vermont are experiencing dental pain, things that have happened in the last 2 months or so, and are having a really hard time coping with it and can't wait until the governor is able to announce that the dental offices will reopen. Let's talk to Lisa in Brattleboro. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I have a question about the care of cloth masks for regular people. And it's especially important to know how to take care of them properly. I don't have my normal access to a washer and dryer at this time, and I don't have a car. And there must be other people who don't have a washer and dryer handy and don't have a car. So I've been washing them in hot water letting them dry and then ironing them. Is that enough? Is that safe?
Yes, according to the CDC website, you can wash them in soap and water. You can do that in a washer. You can do that by hand and then allow them to completely dry and do that on a regular basis if you're wearing them regularly, and that should work. And thank you so much for wearing a mask. I'd like to thank all the Vermonters for continuing to do that. I know it's uncomfortable, and it can be awkward, and it can limit the amount of contact and connection you have with people. But wearing masks, washing hands, and doing social distancing for months to come is what will keep us, hopefully, in our number one spot in the nation in terms of having low rates of COVID-19.
Thanks very much for your phone call, Lisa. I've got to believe, Tracy, that a lot of people have that similar question about masks. You know, depending on what kind of mask I have, how often do I have to clean it? Do I need to clean it every day, every time I go out, in order to make sure that that mask is working as effectively as possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. You don't have to clean it every time you go out, but if you're going out often, daily works. If you go out once in a while, you may want to clean it once every few days. I think you'll have to use your best discretion there. I clean mine every couple of days, and that seems to keep it clean for me. Depending on the material, you might even see when it's soiled. But otherwise, I would go with either daily if you're going out on a regular basis or a couple of times a week.
Tracy, we've been talking about very good trend numbers in Vermont. As I mentioned, I think one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the country. Everything seems to be moving in the right direction. The governor, as he likes to say, is turning the spigot a quarter turn. We see retail, non-essential retail opening today. With all this good news, do you look at it? Are there some things that you're still very cautious about, some concerns that you have that would indicate, hey, we're not out of the woods yet?
I would say that all of us here at the health department, and I'm sure in healthcare in general, have been concerned from the beginning and continue to be concerned about elderly people living in long-term care facilities, elderly people who are already sick. We know that they are the most vulnerable, and we know that once COVID-19 enters a facility like that, it can move very rapidly. That's where we saw some of our early outbreaks. Now, we have done some very good work reaching out to every long-term care facility, doing an assessment with them of their infection prevention protocols, ensuring that they have the protective gear that they need, and ensuring that every time there's a new resident admitted, they are isolated. And that system is supported to understand how to do that well. So we've seen a really nice adjustment there, and we're seeing much less transmission and many fewer cases. But that continues to be a concern, because if we do get any kind of surge, while it might make many people sick and maybe even very sick, we know for sure that among the elderly people, there's a higher risk of becoming severely ill or even a fatality. So that continues to be a concern. And the other general concern is, as we open up and people start to feel more comfortable and it's summertime and you're not hearing about it a lot, the sense that it will go out of people's minds. But please recognize that this hasn't gone away in the country, and it hasn't gone away in Vermont in so far that we are somehow immune to it. We're not immune to it. We just have a low number of cases. If cases pick up, we are just as susceptible as anyone else. So all of the things we've been doing, I do worry that we will get tired of doing them, and especially if we don't hear about cases. But remember, there is a lag time in most public health and in most pandemics. So if we relax too much, what we may see 2 to 3 weeks later is a real surge. So thinking about this less as how long do I have to do it, and more as how do I adjust my lifestyle so that this is just part of what I do for the months to come.
Tracy, we've gotten a couple of emails from folks who have gone to retail stores, supermarkets, more of the essential type, and they find that some employees at the stores are not wearing masks, and they're distressed by that. And they wonder, what should they do if they go to a store and there are a bunch of employees who are not wearing masks? One email, is there some place where I can report this? Should I talk to the management? What would you recommend that folks do?
Well, luckily, most of the stores I go to, I do see that the employees wear masks. I ask to speak to the manager, but I do have a little more pull because I tell them who I am. and they quickly they quickly come right in line in terms of agreement and promise that they'll have it ready within an hour and have everyone masked up. But I think that's one way to go. I would politely ask to speak to the manager, say that you're a regular customer and that you're really concerned about your health and the health of their employees, and that it's really important to you to see masks. Remind them that this is a governor's recommendation and the health commissioner's recommendation. I'm hoping that the positive peer pressure that we've had around this in Vermont will continue and will spread to employees. And hopefully, if we're able to tie that to an economic incentive where customers are asking for it, that will also help.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Patrice, who is calling from Charlotte. Hi, Patrice. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having this show.
Absolutely.
My question is, if I'm asymptomatic and I'm able to get one of the pop-up tests and I test negative, is it safe for me to visit my 85-year-old mother who lives in an independent living situation with other elderly people or not?
That's a great question. The phrase safe or not is a tough one right now. We don't have absolutes. It's safer for you to visit your elderly mother. I would suggest and continue to recommend that you would wear a mask and she would wear a mask. And I'd ask you to stay at least 6 feet apart. I would ask that you limit your visiting to just her. And again, I would check that she's also feeling well at the time. So there's a few things that would come into that. Now, if that facility, and I don't know which independent facility it is, if they have a continued rule that there's no visitors, then you may not be able to. But if it's independent, they may not have that rule. And I would ask you to apply all the common sense you'd need. I think getting tested is a great idea before that. I think wearing masks and keeping the social distance also makes sense. What we're seeing, Bob, right now is that people are making some choices about whether to contact and be around other people, but people are really doing it in a stepwise approach. For example, I'm going to spend time with one other family for a while, or I'm going to see my parents but not others. And that stepwise approach, I think, is a smart one. Do a little bit, let's wait and see. Do a little more, let's wait and see. Similar to the governor's approach of opening us up little by little.
Let's talk to Mary in Linden. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I have a question about testing also, and I am not symptomatic, but recently requested a test and was told not that they weren't doing it on a large scale yet or wasn't available to everyone yet, but my physician also said, even if you get tested today and it comes out negative, there's no guarantee that you couldn't come in contact with somebody tomorrow who has it and you could come down with it. And so my question about testing is the purpose of testing more to get a read on the general population rather than for an individual's own information, unless, of course, they test and they're sick? Obviously, that then there are other steps that need to happen. But for people who aren't feeling any symptoms, is the purpose really to get a general idea of what percentage of the population has some form of the disease?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And the answer is yes. Primarily, this is giving us as a state a sense of what our situation is, what our incidence and prevalence is. So it's giving us a sense. However, for some people, it gives them peace of mind. For others, if they test negative, while it's true that you could come into contact with it the next day, that's absolutely true. If you're continuing to limit your contacts and you're aware of who you're in contact with and you're continuing to wear face masks, et cetera, it also gives you a sense of who you're feeling more safe around. It's no guarantee, and it wouldn't be a free pass to then tomorrow show up, to drive somewhere and show up at a large party or anything like that. We're still really encouraging people, very small groups, and to limit your contacts. But it is primarily for state surveillance to give us a sense. And then secondarily, if someone has mild symptoms, of course, or any symptoms, that would give them a better sense and we could isolate them. But for those who are asymptomatic and not in any contact with known COVID-19 cases, they will have information that is good for that day, But on the other hand, if they're continuing to act in a way that they were before, the chances may be less likely in those coming days that they will run into somebody with COVID-19. And so that information gives them just a little bit more data upon which to make some decisions. But you're right. It isn't a free pass. And of course, it's only good for as long as it's good for.
Tracy, could we have a situation where a person would actually be tested negative for the virus, but it's in its incubation stage, if that's the right word, and that if you tested them 3 days from now, they would actually test positive?
That is a good question. If somebody was early in the disease and they were actually already infected, but their viral load was very low due to being early, it's possible they could test now and then 3 days later test positive. Yes, that's possible.
So as you were saying, just because you have a negative test, that's not a free pass to do everything and anything you want to do.
No, it isn't. It shouldn't change your behavior too much. It might give you a little more confidence about one new contact that you've been concerned about. But again, you know, it's not a perfect science, and we know that it's possible that you're carrying it. We also know in Vermont right now, the chances are probably relatively low if you're asymptomatic that you're COVID-19 positive. But these are all things to take into consideration as you move forward.
Let's talk to Carol, who's calling from Newport. Hi, Carol. What's on your mind today?
Hi. What I was wondering is I went into a post office recently, and the gentleman in there, I had my mask on because I wear my mask all the time out in the public. And he said, you know, that mask does you no good. And I said, well, why is everybody wearing them then? And he said, well, I know that they don't amount to anything and there's really no need in having them. He didn't even have one on himself. And I wondered, you know, if that's true or not. And maybe, you know, somebody could tell me why we are wearing these masks.
That's a great question. Thanks a lot for asking it. I would say early in this pandemic, when we had heard that mask wearing was common in some other countries, and I think for a lot of Americans, they learned about that habit early in this pandemic. Here in the United States, there wasn't a sense that that would be helpful. And we didn't hear those recommendations from CDC. In fact, CDC said you don't need to wear masks other than if you are in a healthcare setting and that the N95 is effective and maybe a surgical mask, but nothing else is. And now in the last couple of months, we've learned a little bit more about the value of masks. There have been more studies done and some peer-reviewed studies on the value of masks. And we are learning that they have some value. They are not 100%, obviously, but the respiratory droplets, which are fairly large particles that primarily carry COVID-19, not the only particles, but the ones that primarily carry it, are large enough that if you cough or sneeze, they can be passed along into the air. And if you're around someone long enough, someone could contract the virus from you. But a face mask limits some of that. It doesn't limit it entirely, but it's helpful in limiting some of that. And if the person that you're near is also wearing a face mask, it limits it on that side too. So having everyone in a room wearing a face mask, even 80% of people in a community wearing face masks when they're out around each other, can significantly slow this down, along with hand washing and social distancing, and of course, staying at home when you're sick. So it has proven to show that it is one very useful strategy to use. And it's true that early on, that wasn't recommended. And that's one of the challenges of communication with this pandemic. Information is changing all the time, and it can make people feel like, well, maybe I shouldn't listen to any of it. Or maybe they don't know what they're talking about. And it's not that people don't know what they're talking about. They're learning as they go. So folks at CDC, folks at Johns Hopkins, and other medical research places are learning as they go, and they're studying this on the fly and at the moment, and we are learning more and more, and we want to pay attention each time. In 2 weeks, there might be something else that comes out, and we want to pay attention to that too. We're really lucky that people are able to take the time to study this while at the same time fighting this pandemic.
And I think, Tracy, what happened to a lot of people early on was the idea of wearing a mask. People thought, well, this is going to be a way to protect myself. And then they might have heard, well, actually, it's a way to protect other people from if you've got the virus.
It does. And ultimately, if we all wear them, we are protecting ourselves in a way, right? So by wearing it in front of you, I'm protecting you. But then when you wear it in front of me, you're protecting me. And so the collective wearing protects ourselves. But just one person wearing it primarily protects the person that they're speaking with. And so that's why we really do want herd effect happening.
Let's talk to Kathy, who's calling from Middlebury. Hi, Kathy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. One quick question. Is there any plan to open up places like a transfer station where you would get rid of large quantities of maybe junk, not necessarily garbage, but other things like construction waste?
Sorry, I don't know much about what's happening on that front.
Kathy, we will try to find out for you. Maybe we can be in touch with you later today and find someone in state government who could answer that specific question. Let's talk to Nye, who's calling from Brattleboro. Hi, Nye. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. My question is about cleaning the masks. I've heard that if you put them in a very low setting oven for 30 minutes, that will take care of germs, viruses, whatever.
I would suggest that you visit the health department website, and they have a whole section on masks that describes cleaning. I have not read that is one of the recommendations for cleaning the masks, but if you go to healthvermont.gov and you look on the section for cloth masks, they will describe a protocol for cleaning. And primarily, we've recommended hot water and soap or a washing machine. But if you check there, any new methods that come up will be placed there because we automatically link to CDC. So if that's a new method that comes out, you will see it there.
And Tracy, let's just repeat that website, healthvermont.gov.
That's right. That's our health department website. And there is a clear link right at the front that says COVID-19. And you can look by topic or depending on who you are and what your interest is, and you should be able to find everything there. We reference all of the C2C material that is relevant for the public. And so if you go there, what you're getting is the CDC advice.
Very good to know. Let's talk to Chuck, who's calling from Hinesburg. Hi, Chuck. Welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great.
My question has to do with the relative immunity that you get from having the disease, and I think there's a test for antigens or something, and my thought is that that'll get us down the road to herd immunity. And what is the status of that? Do we know much on that end?
Sure, I'm happy to answer that. I think you might have called in last time, and we were going to check back with you. So there's actually three kinds of tests. There's a PCR test, which is the viral or molecular test, and that's the test that you're hearing about now that we're doing here in Vermont. And that's a viral test, and it tells you if you have a current infection, and it detects genetic material from the virus. There's also an antibody test, and we're not doing widespread antibody testing right now, and that will tell you if you've had a previous infection, because your body will produce antibodies, and that's what that test is looking for. We are not doing that right now in Vermont, because the current antibody tests are not seen to be particularly effective. We're looking for the FDA to recommend and promote a test, and that's probably what we would do in that case. And then finally, I think you spoke about an antigen test. The antigen test for COVID-19 is new, and it's not being used yet in Vermont. It detects pieces of the virus, and that's a test that can be done in a doctor's office, and we're not doing it at this time. So the regular test, the PCR test, is something we're doing in a widespread way. And then the antibody test is something that eventually should be available. And then you asked, if you get infected and then you become well, do you have antibodies? You will likely have antibodies. What we don't know yet is how much that protects you. It'll give you some immunity. And in some diseases, if you get the disease and you develop antibodies, you're unlikely to get it again. But that's different depending on which virus you contract. So we don't know yet how effective it is to have antibodies, but we certainly know it will be somewhat effective. And that will be helpful to understand at some point when we decide to do some more widespread antibody testing to understand how many people have had it and how much immunity it confers.
Chuck, many thanks for your phone call. Let's talk to Mary in Springfield. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Hi, thank you. I have a question about what makes someone a transmitter and how can I find out if I am? I hope to visit my 94-year-old father, and I'm really concerned that I would ever, you know, pass anything along to him unwittingly.
Well, the thing that would make it possible for you to transmit the virus is if you're infected with the virus. That's the simplest answer. Normally, if someone's symptomatic, we assume that they have more viral load or more virus in their body, and they're more likely to pass it along. If somebody is infected but doesn't have symptoms, they still could pass it along. We think it's less likely, but they still could. So really, it's about whether or not you're infected, and that's the only way to know for sure whether or not you could transmit the virus, which is why we're recommending hand washing, masks, and social distancing, because day to day, people won't know if they have COVID-19. And so doing those three activities, particularly with new contacts or particularly with someone elderly, would be very important.
Mary, many thanks for your phone call. Tracy, people are probably wondering, we're entering, I think, what a lot of people call the new normal as we deal with this pandemic. Do you anticipate that the idea of social distancing of 6 feet and people wearing masks, do you think that's going to be with us for most of the summer?
Yes, I would presume that it will be with us for most of the summer, particularly around people that we don't normally congregate with outside of our families, for example, and particularly in public. I would presume that for the rest of the summer, when you go into a store, a pharmacy, when you go into a gathering, you'd be wearing a mask. And again, that could change if we open up and still see almost no cases. But it would surprise me if that changed drastically, given that we don't have a vaccine. And so we have no way of truly protecting ourselves against COVID-19 other than those kinds of actions.
We've gotten a number of emails, Tracy, about folks who are curious. You know, they know if they leave the state for any major length of time that they need to quarantine when they come back. But then it gets into a gray area. Someone wrote us and said, well, I'm going to a 3-day conference out of state and then coming back. Do I need to quarantine? How do people handle, you know, the governor has said if you go to a supermarket in New Hampshire and come back to Vermont, you're fine. But how should people approach this?
Yeah, I think the governor has laid out some guidelines. If you're going for a quick trip, you normally go into shop, for example, and you come back, or you go to move someone and you come back within the day. I think what we're trying to do is determine if you are less likely to have spent long periods of time around multiple people and you come back, you don't have to quarantine. And the way we're quantifying that is by length of time. So if you're there overnight, you have to quarantine when you come back. However, it's likely that we may give you the option of getting tested on day 7. I think we're working on that policy this week. And if you were to get tested and then be negative, that would be one way to release you from quarantine. And I know that's really challenging because summertime is a time when people want to visit relatives and travel. And so we recognize that right now with our policy, that will significantly curtail your travel and could impact your decisions. But again, while we're opening up like this, we want to be as safe as possible. And we want to save as many lives as we can. And I think particularly about the elderly and how important they are in our community. And it's easy to forget that we've got a group of people who are so vulnerable. And we really want to be thoughtful about that as we're coming and going.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from Wilda in Wethersfield. Hi, Wilda. Welcome to the program.
Talking to the operator, you might have answered part of the question because I believe at the beginning of the show, you mentioned quarantine after you came into the state, if you were coming to stay in a hotel. But I would assume you would quarantine before you got here and sign some kind of paper that stated that you did quarantine.
I believe our current quarantine rule is that you come in and you quarantine for 14 days, but I'll double check that. But I believe it's about quarantining when you arrive here for 14 days. I think it could be challenging for us to ask people to quarantine in advance. And so I believe we're asking quarantine when we come in, although that might be adjusting as we go.
Wilda, thanks very much for your phone call. Deputy Health Commissioner Tracy Dolan, still a lot of unknowns out there, aren't there, that you're just going to have to take them as they come along?
There are, but the one thing we do know is that we're doing really well on our transmission. We're doing really well on our curve and our case numbers, and that Vermonters are continuing to do great with hand washing, social distancing, wearing the mask, and please keep doing it. This is the way we'll open up. And I know we all want our economy to get going, and the best way to do that is continue to make this sacrifice.
Tracy Dolan, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you so much, Bob. You have a great afternoon.